Howdy, y'all. It's The Takeaway, and I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. We're ramping up this midterm election year with the first primary election of the season. That's right. Now, this is also the first statewide election in Texas since Republican lawmakers passed new voting restrictions last year. Those are the same voting restrictions that prompted Texas House Democrats to flee the state last summer in order to block voting on legislation in a special session.
I didn't know where we were going, how we were going to get there, where we were staying. It could have been any part of the country. I knew we had to leave the state of Texas.
The law was eventually passed in a later special session. At the top of the ballot, in the race for governor, there's some names you probably recognize.
I'm running for re-election to keep Texas on the right course.
Incumbent Governor Greg Abbott easily beat out his primary challengers, winning the Republican nomination for governor in order to move forward in his bid for a third term in office. On the other side, Beto O'Rourke, the El Paso native who ran for Senate against Ted Cruz 4 years ago, well, he won over 90% of the vote for the Democratic Party's nomination for governor.
And this group of people, and then some, are going to make me the first Democrat to be governor of the state of Texas since 1994.
There were also some key races that are going to now head into runoffs. Incumbent Attorney General Ken Paxton faces a runoff for the Republican nomination against Land Commissioner George P. Bush. And down in South Texas, progressive candidate Jessica Cisneros will face a runoff with incumbent U.S. Representative Henry Cuellar, who is a conservative Democrat for Texas's 28th congressional district. But as we look at the Texas primaries and what these returns may mean for the midterms in November, one key question remains. Will this be the year that Texas goes blue? And here to help me answer that question is Otis Evagaro, who is chair of the Harris County Democratic Party. Tell me, Otis, why was the Texas primary so early?
Hello, Melissa, and thank you so much for having us. None of us know why the Texas primary was this early. We're the only state in the country that has a primary before May. It's just another form of voter suppression that we have to face down here in Texas.
So, in fact, talk to me a bit about that. What do we know about voter turnout? And again, just so that folks understand, right, such an early primary means that there are real challenges in getting enough information to voters so that they know that the primary is happening. That is the way that it is suppressive. So what do we know about turnout?
Yeah, turnout usually in Texas is really low, and we have one of the lowest turnouts in the country. We're always consistently in the bottom five, and that's happening here again in our primary. We're in the bottom five again, and we will probably be in the bottom five when it's all said and done when it comes to primary turnout, and you'll see that again in November. It's been a consistent trend here in Texas. We have some of the most restrictive voting laws in the country, from voter ID to not being able to have same-day voter registration, not being allowed an online registration. So it's a mess down here in Texas when it comes to protecting the freedom to vote.
So based on sort of these restrictive voting measures, some of which we know are new, did you all receive any reports or hear of voters who did manage to turn out having any difficulties actually casting a ballot? Or, again, given how low voter turnout was, were voting operations fairly smooth for those who were able to turn out?
Yeah, so we had issues down here with folks verifying their information. One example is a sitting state rep here in Texas. When he went to go vote, particularly in Houston, his driver's license number was attached to an old address from 15 years ago. These are some of the stories that you hear around Texas. As you all know, and you've heard through numerous news reports, our vote by mail rejection rate has been disproportionately higher than what it's been in the past. That's because the requirements for verification of the vote by mail application and ballot is different. The seal on the envelope is different. Matching driver's license numbers and social security numbers now. We've encouraged our folks who vote by mail to put both their driver's license and social security number and also legibly put their emails and phone numbers on their ballots an application, so that way the election authorities can follow up and make sure that their vote is counted. And what was startling is we saw a lot of older folks who are in our communities and walkers being undeterred. So it was encouraging, but it was discouraging as well because their normal mode of voting was disrupted because of these new laws in SB1. And you saw some of the operations not run as smoothly here in Harris County. And it was a big, big mess.
Tell us, given sort of the point that you're making about the, sort of this critical nature of what's been happening with these suppressive voter efforts and how difficult it is when you have such an early primary, I'm wondering if the various county parties, the state party, received support from the Nationals, from DNC, or if basically locals were left to resource and manage this GOTV effort independently.
Yeah, and you know, when it comes to having the resource for this, this really is a state legislature thing, not so much a party thing. I mean, we had the support of our Texas Democratic Party and Democratic National Committee in terms of making sure that we get the word out and understanding what type of education the voter needs. The biggest issue, though, is that when you create a new law, you must also fund it. You can't cause problems and then not give money to address the same issues that you're about to cause. Now, obviously, the Republican-led state legislature doesn't feel like they've caused a problem. They feel like they've made voting more secure. But what we've seen in the primary already was high vote by mail rejection rate. We saw not enough staffing because one of the things with the SB1, as we call it here in Texas, is the penalties have increased, putting more of the burden on election workers, poll workers, presiding judges at different polling locations. So you saw that staffing at polling locations was hard across Texas, period, in your major counties, in your rural counties, Democratic, Republican. It didn't matter because the burden got put more on them. And so the Republican state legislature did nothing to alleviate that. And then the other thing, too, is when you create a big bill like that and you pass it and you comprehensively change statute of the election code, you have to educate the voters. And there's literally no money spent on voter education, which is on the state. I don't believe that it should be on the different parties. It's on the state. You created this monster. Now feed it.
All right. Let's talk about the actual results of the primaries. Any big surprises, or maybe if they weren't surprising to you, given that you're chairing the Harris County Democrats, maybe, you know, surprising to those of us outside of that local context?
No big surprises here in Texas. I think everything followed a trend line, particularly in both primaries. There are some down ballot races. I don't believe any of the incumbent lost on either side when it comes to the state legislature or the state Senate. I know everyone was paying attention to some of the congressional races, three in particular. We saw one in Austin, Texas, one of the new congressional districts. You're still Congressional District 35. We saw Greg Kassar won, who was a big progressive. Congressional District 30, where we see Eddie Bernice Johnson is retiring. That's going to go in a runoff with State Rep Jasmine Crockett and former Chief of Staff from Mark VC, Jane Hamilton. And then obviously, I know everyone's paying attention to what's going to go down in what we call the Valley region with Jessica Cisneros and Henry Cuellar. That's going to go into a runoff. So those races were big races that we were all looking at. And then Beto O'Rourke being able to get 90% of the vote in the Democratic primary is a big deal. And then on the Republican side, Greg Abbott getting 68%. I know they're going to spin that as a big win, but look, he's underwater. Greg Abbott usually is getting 70-80% of the base. He's not able to get that. A lot of the Trump movement is against him. So we'll see how that plays out. And then the big race on that side is the attorney general race. It's going to be Ken Paxton versus the Bush. As we like to call it down here, it's going to be Trump versus Bush. So we're going to see We're going to see how that shapes out. But we're fairly confident on the Democratic side. We're seeing movement pick up. We're seeing momentum pick up. One thing we're trying to do is we're trying to give our voters a little reprieve. A lot of them are tired. Folks are tired, right? Coming out of COVID, a pandemic, and quite frankly, a state government that is not helping Texans down here. So we're trying to do our best to make sure that we're building momentum. We're going to ride the coattails of Beto O'Rourke and see where it takes us November 2022.
So, you know, as you mentioned, the Trump versus Bush and particularly George P. Bush, the Bushes were certainly represent a time in the American GOP where the National Party was working really hard to get Latino voters and was making some inroads. And we see at least some of that happening in Texas. I'm wondering what the Democratic Party strategy in Texas is for holding on to and increasing vote share among Latinos.
Yeah, and I think that that's one of the trends that, you know, I think there is, it's a little misleading. I don't believe that Latinos are going over to go vote for the Republican Party. One of the things that we see down here in Texas is one of the things that you saw, as particularly in the 2020 election, was they were able to mobilize and get Republican Latinos out more than we were able to get Democratic Latinos out to go vote. So I hope that makes sense, but that's the trend line that we saw down here in Texas.
In other words, turnout rather than choice.
Exactly. And one of the things that we have to do a better job is messaging and getting better messengers. We've got to make sure that we're keeping issues local and we're keeping it to the kitchen table issues. Right here in Texas, things that we haven't done that are easily tangible. The number one thing, we haven't expanded Medicaid. We leave $10 billion of the taxpayer money still on the table because we refuse to expand Medicaid. The consequence of that, we have the highest uninsured rate in the country. We've refused to increase minimum wage. We're still at $7.25. The average rent in Houston is $1,400. No one can pay rent in Houston right now on minimum wage of $7.25. We have not adequately funded public schools. We still spend 39 cents on our dollar in public school, and we're 43rd in the country per pupil spending. And then one thing that's big here is we still haven't fixed our grid. There is PTSD still from when we froze and many of our neighbors froze to death in February of last year. We still haven't done that. So there's tangible things that we've got to keep talking about to our Latino communities and making sure they understand where we're coming from when it comes to these kitchen table issues, and that we're the party that's going to get them to expanded Medicaid coverage, higher wages, their public schools being funded, and a grid being fixed so that way they don't freeze to death like what we saw in February.
So as you were talking about kitchen table issues, I wanted to also go to a sort of a critical issue, depending on like who's at your kitchen table. And that is what's going on for the families of transgender young people who are seeking gender affirming care. And I'm wondering sort of what the message of Texas Democrats is to these families.
Yeah. Oh, the message is that, number one, we're with them 1,000%. We saw an attack on trans kids this past legislative session, and it was disturbing. The Republicans, again, are always obsessed with reproductive rights. They're always obsessed with what's below the belt. They're not obsessed with how they can increase wages, fix our grid, and make our lives better here in Texas. It's always one thing or another, worried about folks' privacy and letting them live and let them being who they want to be. And so, our message is we're going to keep fighting. I think you all saw Harris County Attorney Christian Menefee pretty much rejected what Governor Abbott is doing with this order of shutting down these gender-affirming treatments and having the parents choose for themselves. And also, what we like to tell people, too, it's really rich on the Republican side. They talk about freedom of choice, freedom to do this, freedom to do that, personal responsibility. But at every turn this past legislative session, and even before, and really throughout history, if we're really paying attention, they're always taking away people's personal freedoms. So it's something that we harp about, we talk about, and it's unfortunate what Governor Abbott and Dan Patrick and Ken Paxton have done to trans kids and just trans people in our state. But we're going to keep fighting, and we're going to make sure that we're protecting their rights.
And then just a last question, and I feel like this has been a conversation now for at least 15 years. I can remember right after Hurricane Katrina and, of course, the displacement of so many of my beloved friends, family, neighbors into Texas. We said, well, maybe the one good thing that would come out of this, or maybe one thing that might come out of this, would be turning Texas blue. And so let me ask, how close are you to turning Texas blue, and what shade of blue?
Yeah, we're close, right? And in 2020, you know, I know that the analysis that was done in Texas was doomsday. But I do want to remind folks that Joe Biden lost by 6 points in the state of Texas. Hillary Clinton lost by 9 points in 2016, so we're making gains. We were also 23,000 votes away from having the majority in the state legislature, the state house, for the first time since 2001. So we're close, and we've got to keep organizing. The demographics have changed. Since the last census, 95% of the growth here in Texas is due to people of color. So the demographics are changing. Our message is resonating with voters here in Texas. Folks are tired of the Republican state leadership here. It's been inadequate. And like I've mentioned before, I'm going to sound like a broken record. We haven't increased wages. We haven't increased Medicaid. We haven't expanded it. Public education still isn't funded. We haven't fixed the grid. Oh, by the way, during this legislative session, we took away reproductive rights, pretty much an all-out ban on abortion. And we've also allowed anybody over the age of 18 and older, to carry a gun with no permit, which you've seen an increase in gun violence, which is a part of the national wave. So we've got tangible things to fix and rectify so we can make our neighborhoods safer. We can get people adequate education, get people insurance, increase wages, fix the grid. There's plenty to do here in Texas. So there's plenty what the Republican leadership hasn't done. There's plenty for Democrats to get in and fix so that way people can live better lives.
Otis Evagaro is the chair of the Harris County Democratic Party, and he's taken it to the kitchen table. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa.